Welcome back, guys. DGS. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good. Maybe your ears were burning yesterday. We had Scotty Warman on to talk about all things Cardinals, and I was asking one of my Dave questions that it seemed like when I was a kid, we had this thing called middle relievers, and they'd go 2-3 innings, and then you'd go to the closers. And he said, you know who the perfect example of that is our own Ricky Horton. And we were talking about you yesterday and how that's kind of become a lost art. At least it seems like that. Do you agree, or am I just wrong?
No, well, it used to be that the middle reliever could go anywhere from an inning. It doesn't mean that I did that all the time, but you could go anywhere from an inning to four innings. And so that you were more stretched out. Typically, you were a guy that was a former starter, which I was. I did start some. So there's just less guys like that now because they want the relievers to throw 100% max effort, and that doesn't often work for four innings.
Yeah, one thing that's definitely changed, and Rick, I'm curious. I don't remember the exact number, but when you were playing, the typical pitching staff was 10 guys, right?
Yeah, it was. It was 10, maybe 11 towards the end of my career, but I think it was 10 most of the time.
So what's happened? It's 13 now. So what's happened is instead of one or two guys that would occasionally do what Rick's talking about, because the starters were all going 7, right? They were going 7 or 8 most of the time, and the starters now are going 5 or 6 most of the time. So there's just more guys doing it, which means they're going in shorter stints because they have to throw harder and they have to work harder to throw harder. Mm.
So I actually had a game early in my career, I think my second year, where I threw 8 1/3 innings in relief. 8 1/3.
Wow. You must have been good.
Let's just say our starter was bad, actually. And so, you know, if you only got 10 guys, somebody's got to fall on the sword. And I actually did pitch well that day. But the point is, it didn't matter if I did. I was in there. And so, you know, a very different thing. You know, interesting, guys. John Mozeliak told us on our Friday night show on KMOX after the games on Friday night, he told us about 4 weeks ago, the only way to help pitchers not get arm injuries as much and to stop the pitchers from dominating with the high velocity, the only way to do that is to go back to 10-man staff. He actually said that. Yeah. I was stunned that he said that, but the follow-up thing that he said, guys, is he said there's actually some movement to do that, and it could happen quicker than you think. I was stunned when he said it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that has been kicked around somewhat in the analytics community, but also in Major League Baseball front offices, is to cut it back. So now they're at essentially 13, and that's the max. They're not allowed to have more than that, but they're talking about it. They're gradually working it down to 12 and maybe 11 to force teams to not change pitchers so much.
Hmm. So not only that, it would also force you to develop pitchers differently, draft pitchers differently. It would force travel teams to train their guys differently because they're looking for guys that can throw 3 or 4 innings and have more endurance than strength. And you know, strength and endurance are both important, but, you know, in pitching, it's kind of nice to have both.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you know, what's interesting, too, this whole thing is, you know, this takes a generation to turn, right? So it took a generation to get us where we are now because the pro ranks and the colleges have emphasized velocity and hard throwers get scholarships and guys that throw 85 don't. You know, guys that throw 95 are drafted in the first round. Guys that throw 85 are generally not drafted at all unless they're lefty.
Right.
So it's like the standard has been set. So you have to reset the standard to get it back to where you want it to be.
Well, I'm glad we, you know, the generation that I was in moved from the generation before that had wool uniforms and mittens for gloves.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad. So, you know, it's got to evolve. And get the idea is to make it better and adapt with the times and all of that. And so I think you're right. I think it can change quicker than we think, and it might solve some of the problems of, again, pitching is starting to dominate again, and hitters are a little bit behind.
So we have Kyle Gibson going for us tonight, and I mean this in love. I love Gibson. He's an innings eater. He's been pitching great. He's delightfully boring to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, I know a lot of people who are delightfully boring. And I would hope somebody would say that about me someday, Dave. I don't know, delightfully boring. But I mean, being boring's not a bad thing if boring is steady and stable, and that's your job. So, you know, there's something to be said for that, and having guys like that just kind of get it done. Now, Lance Lynn is not boring.
No.
Lance is the opposite of that. So you can't have everybody can't be Lance Lynn. You got to have a kind of a mixture of all of it.
What was different about him last night? I mean, obviously, you know, he went deeper than he had been. He didn't use very many pitches to get there. Was he just a little bit better with his command?
Yes, absolutely. Better with his command. And I've identified something that I can't quite understand the kind of the analytics of it, but he throws about 93 every game, but sometimes it looks faster. And so if it's 93, it's 93. I get it. But there's an explosion when he's right, and the ball kind of jumps at the plate, different than kind of what we saw in against Miami. And his ball was exploding to corners yesterday, and when he does that, he's very tough to square up.
Rick, we were having discussions probably 2 months ago about when we would have to decide to be buyers or sellers. Are we going to be in the market?
Yeah.
Are we going to try to, you know, rebuild for the next 5 years? I mean, at this point, I'm assuming that those discussions are over.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, at least for the time being they are. I mean, let's say they're tabled. I mean, I would think you'd have to be considered kind of in the buying frame more than the selling frame for sure, because you've got everything pointing in a good direction. You know what's interesting? I would have said if the Cardinals were going to come out of their malaise, it would have been Arenado and Goldschmidt to lead the way, and they have not. They haven't. Now, doesn't mean they won't, but it's been Wynn and Burleson and Pajes, even with his defense behind the plate, and Donovan. Those have been the guys driving this team, driving the offense.
Ricky, talk about Donovan a bit, because I know, you know, he wasn't healthy early and he was coming off of the elbow. So, I mean, you know, it always disrupts your offseason. I mean, he was recovering from elbow surgery from version of Tommy John. So he's, you know, wasn't his normal offseason, wasn't a normal spring for him. But he now in June looks like himself. Like, he's a guy that can drive an offense from getting on base and doing all that. We've even seen some power from him.
Yeah, when we talked to him in spring training, and he had the most severe surgery, you know, more than Tommy Edmonds, I think, and yet his recovery has been different and better, and it's just, you know, some people heal differently, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but I wasn't sure he could go back to playing the outfield again. I thought he was going to play second or third, and, you know, I didn't think that. I thought the outfield, and there was some question early on, Ollie was slow playing him playing some time in the outfield, but he's become a good left fielder. He's got good range.
Really good.
As a left fielder. He's got an average arm. I think the numbers say it's average, but it's also accurate, makes good decisions. And, yes, he's hitting for power now, 3 home runs in the last week. So keep it up, Donnie. Just continue to be delightfully boring, I guess is what I would say.
Well, I'd love to see Gorman get back on track. I just feel for the guy when he's at the plate.
Yeah, well, you know, Gorman had 6 home runs 2 road trips ago. And it seems to him probably like 2 years ago. But, you know, he's as streaky as they come. When he's locked in with his swing, he does a lot of damage. And when he's not, he does not. So, you know, I will say this for him. He continues to run the bases well, defends well, even when he's not hitting. And not all players do that. So I'm glad we have him around and just kind of waiting for him to catch fire again.
Finally, let's talk about how just tough as nails Contreras is.
Oh, I asked him about a week ago. I said, you know, Are you a fast healer? I mean, you can't, some people are fast healers. Do you just heal fast? He said, he shook his head, and he just pointed with one finger, and he said, you know, just one word is what he's telling me. He said, attitude is what he told me. And so I love that. I mean, I love the succinctness of what he said, and I think it's right. I think he just willed himself to come back as early as he has, and he's a gamer, no question.
Next game tonight, 6:15, Braves at Busch. Ricky, have a great call.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
219 DGS on KMOX. If you're listening on 1120, switch over to 98.7. If you can download an app, download the Odyssey app because it sounds absolutely perfect. When I listen to my Jeep in the mornings, I'm driving to see my mom, listening to Chris and Amy or Total Information AM. Wheels, I want to follow up with you on some of the baseball stuff that Ricky was talking about. The mosaic, which I feel really smart because I was saying, like, what happened to middle relief? And I had no idea that front offices were talking about bringing back true middle relief. I'm guessing it's because pitching is so overpowering. It's kind of skewing the game, and you wanted to talk about that today?
Yeah. All right. So there are a couple things we can tie those two things together, because this has been a really awful offensive season, and everybody's seeking answers as to why that is. Like, what's the cause? Well, we know the cause. Pitchers are better than they've ever been, right? Because they can go into labs and not only learn how to throw harder, to go from throwing 93 to 96, 97, or from 98 to 102, but they also learn how to essentially craft their pitches. So they want this curveball to be a little sharper. Here's how you do it. And then you get the instant feedback because you're watching it on a computer screen.
You've seen it happen.
Oh, I've used the tools. I mean, we teach kids these things. I mean, this is being learned in high school, sometimes even junior high, where you can teach somebody how you can pair the pitches together properly. So your fastball has this characteristic. We want your off speed to have the opposite characteristic.
It's really revolutionized.
Yes,
things.
And it's changed it really fast in a very short amount of time. And velocity has been growing for 10, 15 years, right? So you have that happening at the same time that we're learning how to do all these other things. And then on top of that, you have what you're bringing up, which is how pitchers are used, right? So instead of the old days where you'd have a 5-man or a 4-man rotation, really, and then 5 or 6 relief pitchers, and one of those was typically your closer, your Bruce Sutter type, right? And that guy would often throw more than one inning. That guy would often throw 2, sometimes 3, you know? The Bruce Sutter, Goose Gossage, that era of closers would throw more than 3 outs. Not all the time, but at least somewhat regularly. It wasn't uncommon for it to happen. But you had to do things like that because you only had 5 or 6 guys down there. Well, now you have 8 guys down there. So teams are way more aggressive with how they use them. They take starters out earlier because what's better, a guy that's thrown 85 pitches and is starting to get tired, or the guy that hasn't thrown a pitch yet, who also matches up with the hitters that are coming up that inning? So you've heard Ollie Marmol talk about finding a lane for relievers, right? A lane for Matthew Liberatore. Well, that means a stretch of hitters that fit what he does. So maybe it's 2 out of 3 are lefties. All right. That's going to be the spot where we go to Matthew Liberatore. And then right after that is a lane for a righty. So maybe that's Fernandez that's going to get that call. And that's how it's all played out, and it's done in advance. You already know where you want to target guys to come into the game. And because you have 8 guys, you generally have the ability to match up all the time, every day. Where if you only have 4 or 5 relievers, or if you have, let's say you have 6 relievers, you don't have that flexibility to do that every day without hurting those guys. So you're going to have to ask for more from your starters, which is going to make it a little easier for hitters on that third time through. Have you paid much attention to that whole third time through the order thing? Like, it's a real thing. Like, the third time through
they
the order.
To get used to you.
Yeah, only the best pitchers have success the third time through the order. The regular guys start to struggle because they've now seen what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you're tired. So you've got the combination of those things. And you think back the old days, I mean, guys were throwing 7, 8, 9 innings. You would see the same pitcher 4 times in a game. And that's, you don't ever get that now.
And is it as simple as we in America love offense and they're worried about the game?
Yes, but I think that sometimes we overdo that worry, right? Like, the last few years have been okay. Like, last year offensively was okay. You know, it wasn't terrible, it wasn't great, but it was okay. It was better than the previous years because of some of the rules they put in, right? The pitch clock had helped it. They eliminated the shifts. But what you can't really account for is the continued creativity. So one thing that's happening this year, Dave, that you may or may not have noticed is that outfielders are playing deeper than they've had in the past. Sometimes it's only 5 or 6 feet, but by playing deeper, they're taking away extra base hits. They're giving up singles. They're saying, we will give up singles, but we don't want doubles and triples, so we're going to play deeper. And that's why you have a guy like Ciani, who can be really fast, cover a lot of ground. So teams have gone with really fast outfielders, and they're playing them deeper than ever. So that means fewer extra base hits. Well, it's harder to string together 3 or 4 singles than it is to have a walk and a double. You know, and that's where teams are always ahead. They're always looking for an edge. So offense is always going to be behind because it's the reactionary, right? Mm. This is the only sport where offense doesn't have the ball, where offense doesn't initiate the play or the puck or whatever, you know, but offense is the initiator in every other sport. In baseball, it's the reactionary position. So every new change, the strategy is going to favor defense and pitching. So now it takes time for hitting. And I think what we get lost in, though, is that this happens all the time. 2014 was the same offensive output as this year. It was just as bad. It was every bit as bad. And we had all the same think pieces and what's baseball going to do and how are they going to recover from this? But you do eventually, because what will happen eventually is hitters will catch up. They'll come up with strategies that will allow them to compete with what they're seeing. And then the pitchers will change again. And it's going to be this constant back and forth. So if you look throughout history, and I'm loosely picking these eras, but you go to like the late 20s to mid 30s was a big offensive era. Lots of home runs, lots of offense. It was kind of the first offensive boom right after Babe Ruth, right? And then not long after that, it shifted back into the 50s where it was a little more balanced and it gradually moved more towards pitching in the 50s and 60s. Well, late 60s, the pitching was so tough on hitting, they changed the rules, right? They brought the mound down. They all, you know, the Bob Gibson 1.12 ERA. They changed the mound. They brought in the DH in the American League. So they did that to create offense because people do like offense. And if you look at the changes in hockey, basketball, and football the last 20 years, they've all been to get more offense. All of the changes in the NFL have been to get more offense, never to get more defense, because there's action and people like action. So that's what they want in baseball. But how do you dictate that when offense doesn't start the play?
Yeah.
When offense is always in the defensive reactionary position? Well, the only way you can do that is to restrict what the pitching side, the defensive side, is allowed to do. So they've restricted the shifting. And that's what Ricky's talking about there with Mo's idea, and that's kind of the next evolution here, is do we need to shrink the pitching staffs so that teams don't even have the option to do what they do now, and therefore you have to face the starting pitcher more? And
wouldn't that have to be somewhat cooperative?
Well, I mean, it would have to be a rule. Like Major League Baseball would have to say, this is what we're going to do, but how do you do that? I mean, do you stick with the same size roster and say you can only have 12 pitchers and 14 position players? You can't have 13 and 13. You could do that. But if you start trying to shrink the roster, you're costing jobs. And Major League Baseball Players Association is not going to be okay with losing jobs. So you got to figure out a way to balance it. And does that mean you're just going to have 15 position players and 11 pitchers someday? I mean, that's an odd roster.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
234 DGS. We have the think tank coming up later on. We have Judge Tom Frawley, Ian Mackey. Those guys are usually a team. Dave Murray, of course, 330. I believe it's supposed to get over 100 degrees. I'm not sure if it's hit that yet, but Dave will let us know at exactly 1 hour from now. Let's do some audio. What do we have?
Okay, we can start with mine. This felt like a good idea last night whenever I decided I wanted to play it on the show. I'm hoping this goes well. So there is this TikTok sound. It's a song. It's all these little Irish rappers. They're little kids. They're between like 9 and 11 years old, and they rap. And this song is blown up on TikTok. People are doing TikTok dances to it. I can't get this song out of my head. My question is for you guys. Do you like it? Do you think it's catchy, or is it just annoying? Let's listen now. I think they're adorable. Like, at first I was just like, oh, that's a catchy song. And then I saw a video of them performing it live in studio at a radio station. And they were so cute, jumping up and down. They were so happy doing their little positive rap lyrics. They're between like 9 and 11, but they're very adorable. What do you guys think? Is this the song of the summer or what?
If you hadn't told me that that was kids, I would have thought it was a Spice Girls song.
Really?
You don't know anything about pop music.
Yeah, that's true. But that's what the Spice Girls sound like to me.
kind of with Kevin.
Am I wrong?
No.
As a rule, I hate these horrid little wretches. But
why?
But because I'm sick of hearing this song.
Where are you guys hearing this?
Awfully catchy. It's all over TikTok. It must be
on Millennial Talk because it's not hit me.
Yeah, it's extremely popular.
A lot of people are doing dances to it.
Oh.
So if you don't typically get a lot of dance video dances, things. Yeah, you probably haven't gotten it.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's listen to it one more time.
Okay. You can stop what we do. I doubt it. We've got the energy. We'll tell you all about it. I start.
That's Scary Spice.
They're just so cute.
Awful,
I love them.
This awful is little like accents.
And is this like kids pop or is it more like NSYNC?
So I looked it up today. It's a program that they have in Ireland where I guess kids can go after school, and if they're interested in hip hop, they just learn about it and do raps all the time. And they found this beat and they started like freestyling one day and landed on the lyrics, and the song has gone viral. So I'm very happy for them. I think they're very cute.
I'm happy for them too.
Little sound like Irish kids and bears.
Hey, those are my people.
All right, let's do Wheels' audio now.
Which one do we want to do? We got Chivalry. What's the other one I have?
It says Baldwin.
Oh, you got to hear how crazy Stephen Baldwin is. This man is insane. I mean, he's come out with a whole series of videos, I guess on TikTok. I don't know, maybe Instagram, to other places too. He's lost it.
Pretty bad when you're the crazy Baldwin brother.
And he's very much into this. He is down the conspiracy rabbit hole too. Listen to this.
So hey, Hollywood. Now that you know you've been infiltrated by the homeland folks, and you also know you've been infiltrated by the devil, my question to y'all is, are you ready to be infiltrated by the ghost?
No.
What?
Okay, so
no,
we're not. He's wearing a pendant that has a little ghost on it, like a Pac-Man ghost. And apparently he's wearing a t-shirt in some of the videos. I've seen one of them where he's wearing the Pac-Man ghost. So I don't know what this ghost thing means.
These
are all of his videos now. He did one where he was like talking like that. Mm. And he's like, interesting. So many comebacks in Hollywood these days. So many comebacks. Like, what is wrong with this guy?
Okay, so you know the ghost, Dave?
I mean, it's got to be Jesus. He's a super religious guy.
Yeah.
Holy Ghost. That's got to be it.
Is that what he means?
I did a little digging, and he's like launching trying to launch a podcast where he has, quote unquote Hollywood people come on. It's sort of like Roseanne's thing where you get so-called Hollywood people to come on.
I never
want to
hear
like, they're all
anything
pedophiles.
About him again. That bothered me so much.
That was, the thing is, look, everyone's allowed to have their worldview. There's plenty of people out there that
What's
think Hollywood is being infiltrated by whatever. But why do you have to say it like that? You sound insane.
But he's getting a lot of play, though.
And you're making everyone super uncomfortable. And not in a way where it's like, I'm uncomfortable because I don't want to admit that we're being infiltrated. No, uncomfortable because you're just being weird. You're just being a freak. I'm sorry.
I mean, I see it, and I think he's just trying to drum up attention, so he's being weird on purpose, because people are clicking on it because it's weird. If he just comes out and like, hi, I'm Stephen Baldwin, I believe this, nobody would listen to him. But when he's acting crazy, it's like, oh my God.
They're all nuts.
All of the brothers? Baldwins?
All of them.
Yeah.
Billy's nuts.
Yeah.
Steven's nuts. Alex.
Alex got all those anger problems, and he shot that person.
So that's happening on TikTok.
It's pretty bad. You just killed a lady, and you're not the weirdest of your brothers.
And you're starting a new reality show with your fake Spanish wife and your 8 million children, and
you're
it's like
at least I'm not Billy.
Yeah, you're in and out. Of, you're in and out of court like every other day, and you're like, boy, Steven's got problems.
it takes a lot to be the weird one in that group.
What's the chivalry audio?
All right, so this is just asking the question. This is a woman on a train who is noting that none of the guys on the train are getting up to give her their seat.
I'm standing on the train, and look at all these men. What happened to giving up your seat for women? No man offered me a seat. Excuse me, are you going to get up?
What?
Are you going to get up?
Are you pregnant?
No.
Are you for equality?
Yes.
Then f*** off.
What did he ask?
He said, are you pregnant? She said, no. And then he said, are you for equality? And she said, yes. And then he said, well, blank off.
Wow.
But I think, first of all, that interaction seemed set up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that last part, she didn't just go up to a rando and do that. That was set up. But the question was, like, how many people now would do that? And is that even an expectation anymore? That if just a lady, not an 80-year-old woman, not somebody who's, you know, maybe on crutches or who is, you know, using a walk or whatever, but somebody that looks able-bodied, is there an expectation that you give up your seat?
No.
No, I don't think there should be. I think that's I don't know if that era ever existed.
Oh, it did.
Oh, no, it did. Yeah.
I would still do it.
Yeah.
But for any woman, Dave, just for a normal 23-year-old woman.
I mean, if I were on a bus, if I were on public transportation or a train or something, 100%. Yeah.
I don't think that expectation exists anymore. Once in a while, a guy will hold a door for me or do something like that, and it's so nice. I mean, it's really refreshing. It makes my day, but in general, it just doesn't happen.
People don't hold the door?
No.
I hold the door for literally everybody.
Well, right. You're nice.
Yeah, because that's, I mean,
a lot
that's
of people
dudes,
aren't nice.
It doesn't
you
matter
should,
who.
You should hold the door. That expectation, I think, should still be there. I think some expectations of, like, being a decent human being should
see,
still be
I
there.
See, I think... that everything backfires. And so when you had this, let's go after toxic masculinity, what you did, it seems, is you just went after normal masculinity, because there's never been a time with weirder toxic masculinity than right now.
No, yeah, that's true.
You're making a good point.
Yeah.
You got mad at guys who hold the doors for you, and now you got all these bros.
Now you got the bros. The bros have been unleashed because they're now mad.
I don't think it's like entirely women's fault. I think men have had an unhinged response of like, oh, okay,
yes.
So you don't want me to do this, so never mind. Never a nice thing ever again. But yeah, I just, speaking as a woman, people are not chivalrous in general.
So like, I'm trying to think of scenarios. I mean, I'm never on public transportation. Like, it's, you know, but like, let's say when you're riding the shuttle at an airport, if there's a mom and a kid, I will always give it up for the mom and the kid, because the mom has the extra duties, whatever, with the child, and it's not easy to wrangle or whatever. It might be easier to sit the kid on the lap. But if I don't know that I've even thought about it recently, where it's just and somebody that's like me, my age, my abilities, I don't know that I would even think twice. Although I don't normally sit on those. I almost always stand, just because I'm a weirdo.
I'll take it one step further. I'm kind of with Andrew. I don't think that guy should have given up his seat for the lady. I think it's a personal choice you make. Am I going to be chivalrous or not? It's not in the law. It's not, you know, it's not like this is your duty as a man. It's super nice whenever people make that choice, but no one owes that to you. Not in 2024. Society has just changed.
Question
and I
for
think
you.
It's a little entitled to assume that someone should give up their seat for you just because you're a woman.
Question for you. Would you ever read that if it's a dude, like a dude hitting on you? Would you read that as somebody just trying to start a conversation, or is that just different vibes?
I think it's different vibes,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only reason I wouldn't do it is out of fear that I would get yelled at.
Oh, for you, like, oh, you think I need...
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that holds a lot of people back.
Yeah.
Do you have another audio?
I think that was it. I mean, we have some older audio if anyone would like to play any of this.
Yeah, we held on to your elephants thing, Will, so you liked that a whole lot.
Oh, we played it. Did we talk about that?
Which one was this?
Oh, play it. So this is not too long, but this is researchers have been studying elephants, and elephants have names for each other. And this
you
is what
like,
they found. Yeah, like they have a separate name.
That was scary
they
good.
They will make a noise that will call another elephant, but it is a specific elephant, not just another random elephant. They have names for each other.
I'm standing on the train, and look at all these men.
No,
that's not the elephant one.
Oh, jeez.
It's not there anymore.
Oh, no.
We're just going to have to take...
That's all right.
Yeah, just take your word for it.
Take my word for
it. I'll have to do more elephant noises.
Do it again, Dave. That's my name.
That scared me when you did it the first time. I was like, is there an elephant in the room with us?
Do you practice all these animal noises?
No, they just come out.
They're really good.
Which one's that one? That's
it's because I'm not good at math.
Oh, I was going to say, that one's more like the Hannibal Lecter.
God gave me a few gifts.
He got the noises.
All right, fine.
Okay.
Interesting segments. 250DGS, happy Tuesday. So we kind of buried the lead on our Google Doc today. Andrew, you fell asleep driving in?
What?
Yeah, I had a rough morning. And a rough evening. I haven't slept very great the last little bit, and it really caught up with me. So sometimes my wife and I will carpool together. Most of the time we do. And then on the mornings she can drive, and then I'll kind of like nap in the car a lot of the time.
It's better than what I was expecting.
What?
I really thought you were driving.
Oh, today, yeah, I was driving.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
No, today, yeah, I did not
have
that benefit.
Too soon.
Yeah, today I did not have that benefit. And she stayed home, and I don't know what I was drinking caffeine. I was doing everything. I just could not keep my eyes open. I don't know what the deal was. And then I caught myself at one point just sort of just past the Casey's in, on Route 3.
Did you just have that hypnotized thing, or did you think you actually fell asleep?
No, I dozed off for a minute. I was having a little dream. And I realized in the dream...
Well, he was reading, and that makes people tired.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was started dreaming about whatever I was reading. No, I realized in the dream, somebody was like slapping me or something like that. And I realized in the dream, I was like, oh, wait, oh, no, this is a dream, this is a dream. And I like snapped up and I was like, I was driving, but I was kind of listing, you know, I was over on the shoulder.
You got into REM sleep?
Well, I got, yeah, I had a, I don't know if it
yes,
was like.
Yes, the answer is yes. He had
That's
a dream.
That's wild.
Yeah. It was a short dream, but I realized pretty quickly, I'm like, this is not happening.
Why don't you sleep in tomorrow?
Supposed to be driving. I think I'll be fine. I'm going to go to bed earlier tonight. I went to bed too late last night and the night before for sure, knowing that I needed to catch up on sleep. So I that was a mistake on my part. So
what was the thing about Marmol saying that people were yelling racial slurs at him?
Yeah, Kevin, have you seen this
I have not seen this.
I saw this on Twitter too.
Yeah, this is from Ben Hockman. Said that Ali had said, I think it was after the Rickwood Field game when discussing, you know, like what Reggie Jackson said about, you know, when baseball wasn't integrated and baseball was, you know, people would yell things at you when they couldn't accept the integration, stuff like that. And Ali said that he's had Cardinals fans yell like racial slurs at him or say racial slurs to him, you know, online or whatever when they've not been happy with something he did or when the team's not been good or whatever. I'm a little surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised to hear that. And I'm frankly pretty disappointed to hear it. It's okay to not think he's doing a great job. There have been times where we haven't thought he was the best manager in baseball. But you can be better than that. And especially this day and age, when we are supposed to be the best fans in baseball. And I think for the most part, I think we're great fans.
Well, hopefully that's just super, super outliers.
I don't think it's a common thing. I don't think it's like every time he walks through the ballpark, he hears people hurling racial slurs at him. But the fact that it's ever happened, it's like, come on. Well, what's
his report card these days, Wheels?
I mean, to me, it's the same as always. You know, he's still building a resume. He's only been a manager. This is his third year. First year made the playoffs. Second year they stunk. This year, we'll see. You know, but I think my position has always been a manager is what his roster says he will be. Right? I mean, Sparky Anderson's one of my favorite managers, and his phrase was, the players make the manager. It is never the other way around. And that's not to say that managers can't help players and or make get the most out of a roster. They can. But in this case, is it the manager that's got two veteran hitters not hitting the way they have for the last 10 years? No. Is it the manager who had Wilson Contreras on the injured list and wasn't in the lineup playing? Is it the manager that has Tommy Edman on the injured list or Lars Nootbaar on the injured list? And there are decisions that he makes that don't work, and there are some that he makes that do work, but we can't judge until you have enough, right? If you had judged Tony La Russa at the same stage of his career, you would have thought he was trash. You would have looked at his record with the White Sox and you'd be like, yeah, they should have fired him. He was trash. But then what did he become?
He seems to have the clubhouse.
That's the number one thing that we all either know or don't know, right? Like, that's what will undo a manager. You know, we don't always know whether or not a manager is doing a good job, but people in the organization do and the players know. And if you lose the clubhouse, that's a lot. You're going to lose the job. You're not going to keep a job very often where you've lost the clubhouse. And we haven't heard anything like that about these guys bailing on him or whatever.
Was he a player?
So he was a minor league player in the Cardinals organization and obviously wasn't a very good hitter. He wasn't a very good player. He was good enough to be a pro, better than 99% of the population, just not good enough to be a big leaguer. And then when he was getting near the end of his playing time, they talked him into becoming a coach, and then he became a manager. He managed at the lower levels, managed all the way up to AAA, and then became the Cardinals bench coach and eventually the manager. So, you know, he worked his way up in a way that is not common now, right? The more common thing now are recently retired big leaguers, guys that played in the major league. So it's a little different than a lot of the new guys now. Do I do when my love-